Good morning. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network, and glad to have you with us today as we talk about consumer protection issues. Jim Rabbit, Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection in the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, is back with us. Jim, it's a pleasure to see you.
Good morning, Jim. I'm happy to be here.
You've been fighting a cold, I understand.
My voice is going to be pretty foggy today.
All right. So we hope that people will call and do most of the talking, and they can do that if they join us at 1-800-642-1234, and our email address is talk@wpr.org. The Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection and that of the Wisconsin Department of Financial Institutions are making a kind of a joint appeal, saying that job scams and questionable mortgage distress rescues are on the horizon.
With all the unemployment going on, there are people who have not been unemployed for 20 years and haven't had to think about looking for jobs, who are vulnerable to questionable job offers. So we are concerned. We are seeing a lot of work-at-home seminars showing up at local hotel rooms. And we want to warn consumers, check with us before you pay anybody to give you a job. It shouldn't have to work that way. Also, with the mortgage problems, there are people who are having difficulty keeping up with their mortgage.
Sure.
And there are some questionable mortgage offers out there. There are a lot of twists and turns to what people are saying about what they can do to help you keep your home. And we are advising people, call one of our agencies, either the Consumer Protection Bureau or the Department of Financial Institutions, and we will help talk you through the specifics of what you think you're facing.
And there they would go to the 800-422-7128
Yes.
to make that inquiry about whether or not these are reliable and upfront organizations.
Yes. Of course, there are, you know, there's always the red flag. Anytime someone's offering you a job but they want you to pay them, you should immediately throw up a roadblock and stop. Think real hard about why you have to pay them if they have a good job for you. You know, and it's the same thing with mortgage rescue scams. One of the hallmarks is they always want you to give them a sum of money if you're already in trouble.
That's the last thing you need to do.
That's Yeah, and some people are taking their very last savings and trying to save their home. And for the most part, your financial institution has advisors on staff that can help you figure things out, and most of the time they're free. So I would start there.
All right. If you'd like to join us, our number here is 1-800-642-1234. Again, the hotline for consumer protection is 800-422-7128. Or you can go online at the DATCP hotline at wisconsin.gov. Everything changes and seems to be as complicated as ever to figure out an email address.
It sure is. We've had to change ours recently.
All right. Let's go to some callers. We'll start with Joan in Juneau. Hi, Joan. What's on your mind?
We had a roof put on in July of 07. Thought it was a reputable person, and then the gutters were put on by a subcontractor a month later. Right from the start, we had problems. At the first rain, water poured into the basement around the chimney from up above. The guy did come back, and he said there was no flashing. He was not the one that did the work himself. His relative put the roof on. So he put flashing around there. Shortly after that, we had more water, and this was because there was no flashing put on around the vent pipe on the roof. Well, then when it would rain, the water would pour out of the from behind the gutter all the way around the house, and it got worse and worse. Everything was froze up. We couldn't even use the service door. It was just a horrendous problem. So finally, we called a different roofer to come and check to see what was going on because my husband looked up above, and it appeared there was no wood to the end of the roof, like about a foot in from the rough edge. It was just shingles and felt paper. So in essence, you could just take a hold of the roof or all the way around and push down, and the whole foot of the rough edge would have broken away. Well, this contractor has gone out of business because of other unscrupulous jobs, and he's filed bankruptcy and is no longer in business. We have heard that he did have insurance through July of the following year, and we're wondering now if we would be covered.
Boy, that's a complicated story. First thing I would say is there is no law in Wisconsin about issues concerning quality of construction. For the most part, that becomes a private lawsuit between you and the contractor if they didn't work up to the standards of quality. And it sounds like you'd have a pretty easy time proving that. The second problem is the fact that he's gone out of business. I would certainly check and see what that insurance was, because it was in place at the time your job was done.
We did do that.
Okay.
And we are going to have an insurance man come here and look at it. But if he refuses, do we have any other repercussions?
Well, your last recourse would be to sue the builder himself. And this is the real hard part that people are facing nowadays. If he is out of business and in bankruptcy, the bankruptcy court has control over all of his finances. And what you may end up having to do is contact the bankruptcy court and get your name on the list of people who are owed money.
Okay.
So, and all of that is going to be something you're probably going to have to do privately with your own attorney. There's no state agency that helps with those particular kinds of problems.
So your agency could not help us?
Knowing from what I've heard so far, I don't believe so. Having said that, it certainly doesn't hurt to file a complaint with us, have us look through everything and see if there's anything else that, you know, we can't, in a short conversation, discover, but we may be able to look through your paperwork and your contract and find something we could do to help out.
Okay, thanks much.
All right, Joan, thank you very much for your call, and good luck to you. Let's go to Fred next in Delavan. Fred, what's on your mind today?
Thank you for taking my call, gentlemen. I had a quick observation. I wanted to get your guest comment. With AT&T, with their cell phone, in order to get detailed billing, I have to pay $6 per line in order to see what they're billing me for. I wanted to get your guest comments about that, and, you know, get it maybe hopefully an explanation as to why that's okay.
Oh boy, I'm not exactly certain that it is okay. There is a law in Wisconsin that says they need to give you a bill that has sufficient detail for you to be able to see what you're being charged for. I would like to take a look at that. I guess I have not seen any complaints from consumers about that, but I would like to take a look at it and see if the law can apply there, because we do require itemized billing. So if I would ask you to, if you can, file a complaint form with us with a copy of the bill, and we'll have someone take a look at it and see if our law applies to that situation.
Excellent. I certainly will. Thank you, Mike.
All right, Fred, thank you very much. And again, the number for you to get in touch with the hotline is 800-422-7128. Let's talk about no-call for a minute. Things just changed. I think January was the changeover date for people being added to the list. When is the next effective date?
The list comes out quarterly, so the next effective date will be March 1st. We will publish the next list. Consumers will have to be signed up for that by February 1st,
okay,
so that we'll have time to compile the list and send it out. My recommendation is, consumers, you're on the list for 2 years, and then you need to renew, and it doesn't hurt to renew early. All we do is push back your date when you renew. So I recommend people renew on your birthday or something to remind yourself. I fell off the list about a year ago, and all of a sudden my phone started ringing again.
And how do you know whether you're on the list or off the list? Is there a number you can call that will be able to identify that?
You can call one of our people in the no-call area, and they can confirm whether or not you're on the list.
Okay.
And my recommendation is, if you're not sure, just dial in and put yourself back on. It doesn't hurt.
I'm not sure for myself, and I keep wondering whether I am or not.
Well, I found out I wasn't when my phone started ringing again.
All right. Fred, thanks very much for your call. We appreciate hearing from you. We're talking with Jim Rabbit, who's the director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection for the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. In our introduction, I mentioned something that I had received by email, and it was survey@walmart.com. And I've been chosen to take part in a customer satisfaction survey, and if I decide to complete it, Walmart will send $150 to my confirmed credit or debit card account just for my time. The survey form is attached to the screen. Please download the attachment, open it, follow the instructions, and give away all my financial information.
Of course. At the end, they're going to ask for your account number and everything they need.
So you don't think that this is official Walmart survey?
I very, very highly doubt it, and we have not confirmed that at all, but I very seldom make black and white statements, but one I will make is never, ever give any of your financial data to someone who contacts you.
Always the other way around.
Always the other way around. Even if it's someone you do business with, I always tell them, I will call you back, and then I look up their phone number so I know I'm calling the real business and not somebody who's trying to fool me.
So then I received a notice that I had won second place in the $7 million grand prize draw sponsored by Reader's Digest magazine, and was sent a check for $5,935 to get things started, and all I had to do was to contact my representative without any further delay and provide the information that they would need to activate this winning.
We've heard a little bit about this. The legitimate Reader's Digest and Publishers Clearing House, who actually do run sweepstakes, are concerned because their names have been hijacked and are being used by people who produce, for the most part, they're producing false checks.
Mm-hmm.
They've hijacked someone else's account number. We know that Publishers Clearing House has been asking state agencies for help, even in identifying who these folks might be, because someone is hijacking their name and hijacking an account number from somewhere else and creating these fake checks.
We're talking about consumer protection issues with Jim Rabbit, Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection, and we'll take more of your calls in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller. Glad to have you along with us today. And let's go back to the phones. The number for you, 1-800-642-1234. Ken in Oshkosh is next. Hello, Ken.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Just wanted to let the gentleman from Consumer Protection to be aware of a situation that happened to me. This was about 2 years ago. While I was going towards foreclosure, before the foreclosure hearing, one of the lenders authorized a company to break into my house and change the lock. And this was done before the hearing. Now, my concern, because I had worked with disabled individuals at that time, my concern was that this had happened to someone on diabetic medicine or, God forbid, Schedule II narcotics. It could have produced literally a life-threatening situation for them. But it was settled civil court. The police would not even take a burglary deal for it. So it's something that may be happening to other folks in Wisconsin.
Whoa. We have not been hearing any complaints of that severe of an action by a collection company. I know there are certain rules for folks who are working on foreclosures, and I'm not sure that that's something they can do. I know when they foreclose on a car, that they have to give you an opportunity to remove possessions from the car because the possessions are not part of their lien against the car. And I always assumed, and that's something we should check with the Department of Financial Institutions, they should give you access to the home for medications and other personal possessions because their lien is not against your personal property. For the most part, it's against the home.
Yeah, well, it was obviously a mistake of some sort on their part, but it took me 8 days to finally get the keys to get back in my house.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just so you folks are aware that this may be happening to other individuals in Wisconsin, and hopefully there's something that can be done about it.
Thanks for the warning, Ken. Appreciate hearing from you, and I know that Jim will see what else he can find out about the situation. Cheryl and Madison, let's bring you into the conversation. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm going to be selling a used car myself pretty soon, and I'm just wondering if there's any particular precautions or recommendations that you could make to me about how to make sure I'm not taking a bad money order from somebody, or just financially how to protect myself.
Well, one of the things that we've seen a fair amount of all around the country are these fake money orders. And one of the hallmarks is very often they pay you more than you're asking for the car. And then the problem is they really don't want the car, because then you can trace them. The authorities can trace them back and find the car again. What they want to do is overpay you and then say, oops, can you please send me a refund for my overpayment? Or I'm going to send you extra money to pay the driver when he comes to pick up the car. And then they send somebody over to pick up the extra money, and you're out the money because the check was no good to start with. So absolutely anyone who wants to overpay you is a very questionable situation. The other thing you may want to do, it's relatively rare for somebody from a long distance away to come and buy a used car.
Okay.
Most of them should be local people, and you should be able to check out with the bank that issues the money order and make sure it's a legitimate money order.
So before I let them drive away with the car, call the bank and verify that the money order is legitimate?
I would recommend that, yes.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Cheryl, thank you very much, and good luck to you. Otherwise, you can get a certified check, ask the purchaser to get a certified check from their bank?
Yes, yes. And the hallmark of these is the check comes from somewhere a long ways away, so it's very difficult to trace it back, and it's usually for more than your asking price.
All right, Jim, let's go to Patty in Eau Claire next. Hi, Patty.
Yes, hi. I've got a question about what it takes to have a product recalled. I recently, in October, bought a Whirlpool gas range, which is owned by Maytag now, I guess, and the clock. When the clock would work fine unless you use the oven, and then the clock would not work again until you reset it. I called, and the appliance guy came out, and he said, oh, yeah, one of these. This service company has been putting clocks in all over town. For one man, he's put four of them in. He told me a long story about how they even had an electrician come out to see if there was power surges and this, that, and the other thing. And he told me, I cannot guarantee you that if I replace this clock, it's going to work. He replaced my clock, and sure enough, it doesn't work. I've contacted the company and told them about this problem, and basically all they said, I said, you know, the part costs $223 if I had to buy it. And all they want me to do is keep trying, I guess, for my full year's warranty, and then they'll say, sorry, your warranty's out. And I said to them, you know what, since the value of my stove is not worth what I paid for it because I have a defective part and you guys have known about it, why don't you just send me a check for $223, and then I won't have to, and of course, I knew they were going to say no, and they said no, and that they don't see that there's any problem, and I've given them the number of the company I work with and stuff, and I just can't believe that they're not aware of this problem. The clock comes from China, and none of them that my company has worked with work properly. What does it take to have a product recalled? And I will listen off the air. Thank you.
That's a very interesting story. The direct question about what does it take to get a product recalled, there are no set published standards. What we see most of the time, most recalls either are voluntary by the company who just says we're going to bring the product back. Obviously, this company doesn't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Those that are ordered generally have been ordered by the Federal Consumer Product Safety Commission, and that usually means there is a safety a hazard question. And so then the government feels that they are compelled to protect people by ordering a recall. Something like a clock not working is not going to rise to the level of a safety hazard. So the odds of getting that recalled are pretty slim. But the underlying question is, how long do these guys have to keep replacing the clock? I would argue that we started working on this clock while it was under warranty, and I want that warranty needs to continue for that clock even after the 1 year is up, because that's a problem that started during the warranty period, and we're going to replace clocks until infinity until you guys figure something out for me. And that would be my position with the company, is you're just going to keep, if that's your solution, that you can't do any better than this, then I'm going to have you, a guy out here every week putting a new clock in and, until you get tired and decide to do something correct for me.
Good luck with your clock, and let's go to Derek next in Round Lake. Hello, Derek.
Yes, hi, good morning. A very interesting show. As a consumer rights activist based in Northern Illinois, I have taken about 40 different corporations to court for over 10 years, usually over trivial matters, over charges, coupons not accepted, and basically common consumer rip-offs, $1 to $3 at a time. I also have spent a lot of time overseas, mostly in the European Union and Japan, and I'm really sorry to say this, that U.S. has probably the least developed consumer protection program in all developed countries, and it's extremely sad. You know, each individual consumer rights protection agency is dispersed for each individual state. A lot of the laws which were supposed to be regulating consumer protections are written by lobbyists, by each individual corporation, which is based in, you know, a legislative center, whether it's Madison, Wisconsin, or in Springfield, Illinois. And the consumer rights organizations, which are run by the government, usually go after very high-profile cases to have the politicians, which usually oversee those agencies, get a political mileage out of them. So it seems to me that basically the consumer rights system in the United States, as it is right now, is absolutely broken. People who are purchasing, for example, homes, which are the biggest investments of their lives, have absolutely no consumer protection whatsoever. Everything is being brought to the lowest common denominator of a personal lawsuit, for example, which is fine if a person is wealthy, has resources, but if you don't, then you're simply out of luck. As well, for example, a food safety issue, which recently has become a very transparent issue. Do you know that actually, that for example, in Illinois, the Lake County Health Department does not have absolute no authority whatsoever over expired food being sold off the food shelves. And this is really a situation where the government pretends to protect consumers, you know, and the consumers pretend to actually get help, but actually, as far as the lowest common denominator of results is, issues such as this are often settled out of court with the binding order to keep the issue secrecy, corporations not taking any responsibility whatsoever. And I'd like to hear the your response from the your guest.
Well, we talked about several different issues here. I think there are varying levels of consumer protection all over the United States, and he's absolutely true. There are places where protection is better than others. I work with a lot of agencies around the country, and actually a lot of international agencies as well. And it is true that there are some places where it is better than others. In Wisconsin, the question of how consumer laws are written, in Wisconsin, the laws that we work on are all written in the public. I do a fair amount of legislative work, and we draft proposed laws. We go out around the state and hold public hearings. Consumers have the opportunity, as well as business people, to comment, and we redraft based on the comments. So there's quite a process in Wisconsin for the consumer laws. It is difficult when you have millions and millions of consumers, and it's quite a chore for a state agency to try and protect them all. And so we do have to look at the kinds of cases that will give us the biggest result for the broadest part of the population, so that we can't, we don't spend the taxpayer money unwisely. The food safety question, which was the last one he brought up, we actually have a division of food safety within the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, and I cannot speak to the work that they do. I know that they have inspectors out, and they're mostly looking at products as they are being prepared. They're looking at in the canning factories or in the meat packing places as the food is being prepared. I'm not sure that they're looking at the food once it's on the shelf for expiration dates, so I can't speak any more to them.
So when he levels this blanket criticism against government agencies and safety and consumers, does that sit well with you?
I believe Wisconsin is one of the better places in the country as far as the level of consumer protection we provide. And I can say that this year I'm the president of the National Association of Consumer Agencies, and I do have the opportunity to talk to my counterparts from all around the country and in great detail about what kind of funding and staffing and laws they have. Mm-hmm. And I believe Wisconsin has been a leader in consumer protection. And even now with the tough economic times, I hear a lot of other agencies around the country who are really not able to provide the kind of service they want to. And Wisconsin, I think, remains a leader.
Derek, thank you very much for your call. Let's go to Maureen next in Wauwatosa. Hi, Maureen.
Hi. I just wanted to, this is a comment. My sister just received a call, a recorded message saying that her Visa card had been compromised and to press this button, to press this, and et cetera, up to the point where they said, we would like your, please give us your account number. She hung up.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see where some people would just panic and give them the number. I think people need to know. It was 24-hour banking, and it was a recorded message.
Oh, boy. This one has an interesting twist. We did have a couple of consumer calls about this exact issue that turned out, in fact, to be the legitimate card company calling to tell them that they had had a breach.
Really?
And when we talked to the card company, we said, you sound exactly like the scammers that we're telling people not to respond to. So our recommendation is she should have a number on her card to call.
She did call. And they said, no, that would not be right. They would never ask for the account number over the phone, which everybody's been told, right?
That was the very wise move. And we actually criticized the card company that used this type of recording legitimately to try and get to their customers, because we've always told customers never respond to that incoming call. And she did the right thing by calling back on a number that she knew was a good one because it was printed
right
on her card.
But if they're legitimate, why would they ask for an account number?
Well, that's the
bad part. Why
that's the red flag right there. If they're asking for an account number, that's when I always say, do not do that. That's the red flag. You stop the call then. Call them back on the number you know, and then you know who you're talking to, or you have,
correct,
you know, so that's very good advice.
Okay, I just wanted to let you know that's going on.
All right, Maureen,
thank you.
Appreciate the warning. And on to Barbara in Madison. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. In 2007, my daughter purchased a house in Colorado, and I gave her a mortgage on the house, and I recorded it. And since that time, I've been getting letters asking if I want to sell my mortgage. But last week, I got a phone call, and it was a Canadian number, and was asking the same question, did I want to sell the mortgage? And I said, no, of course not. I'm not selling it for 50 cents on the dollar. And then I thought, well, maybe this is some kind of a scam, and I mean, coming from Canada, and the number was blocked out, and I thought of the Nigerian scam, and then this overpay scam that you talked about. Have you heard of anything like this?
I have not heard of the mortgage purchase scam. And I imagine that's relatively rare that individuals hold mortgages that they might want to sell. But I think one of the things that we see is there is a tremendous amount of telemarketing coming out of Canada right now.
Mm-hmm.
There are actually cross-border task forces trying to address the difficulty that we have reaching out to these telemarketers coming out of Canada. And I think you were right to just stop and think twice about it. I really couldn't tell you if that was any kind of a legitimate offer. We have no history on them, but it sure is questionable.
Well, then would I thought, well, maybe I should report this to someone, and then I thought, well, who do I report it to? A crime hasn't actually been committed, because I said, no, I'm not going to sell my mortgage. And so, you know, they could just say, we're just a business and we want to buy your mortgage, even though we're in Canada. So I didn't think a crime was committed, but, you know, I don't understand why someone in Canada would buy a mortgage all the way out in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, and that's a really good point, that very often consumers, it may not be a crime, but it may be something that's not a good offer or not giving you the value for your dollar. And sometimes when we don't know, which I haven't heard of this before, so I really don't know if it's legitimate or if it's a crime. You know, I just always say be very careful, be cautious. It may not be a crime, but there are a lot of consumers who lose money just by making a poor decision as well.
All right. Thank you.
Barbara, thank you very much for your call. Again, the number for you to get in is 800-642-1234 as we talk with Jim Rabbit of Consumer Protection. And we go to Dan in Sheboygan next. Hi, Dan. What's on your mind?
Yeah. I was disputing a bill with a medical provider. And what they did was eventually send it to the bill collector. And then I started getting harassing telephone calls, and I didn't know it was sent to the collection agency at all. And the collection agency just identified themselves with 3-4 initials. And I says, who are you? And they wouldn't identify themselves. And then they says, well, we have this bill from your provider. And I says, who are you? I mean, who are they? And I says, I've got a bill there, but I'm disputing it, and it isn't for the amount that you're disputing, you know? And it was two different numbers. And what the provider did was they took later payments, you know, and applied it to that bill. So it made numbers different, you know? And they also wrote off some of it as a bad debt. And so the numbers are not the same. And to this day, I have three different times that they called. I asked them for, give me some identification, who you are, blah, blah, blah. I says, anybody could see I got, you know, this bill there and whatever. And the provider didn't send me that they were going to do this, and the numbers are different. And sometimes the bill collector calls they don't leave a message, but I see their number on a phone. It's unidentified, but I call them back. It could be something important, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when they answer the phone when I call, they don't even want to identify themselves. Is this a hoax, or do I have to contend with that anyway? Or?
You know, I'm going to add another phone number to the mix today, because bill collectors are regulated by the Department of Financial Institutions. Let me give you an 800 number for them. It's 1-800-452-3328. And one of the things I would ask, my understanding of the collection laws is that they must identify themselves to you. They must identify that they are a bill collector. You should be able to ask what their license is to be making collection attempts in the state of Wisconsin, and if you are disputing a bill, then they should stop calling you and give you an opportunity to complete your dispute. So I would call that 800 number, talk to someone who knows those laws very, very well, and see if they can give you some more advice on what to do with this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Dan, thanks. Good luck to you. Thanks very much. And on to Kathy in Green Bay. Next. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Okay, November 15th, I bought a $1,500 computer from Circuit City. A week later, they filed for bankruptcy. Now, I paid cash for it, so I didn't buy it. Thank God I didn't buy it on time. But I bought the extended warranty. Now, what happens with that warranty if anything goes wrong with the computer?
My understanding of the Circuit City situation is that they have set aside enough resources to complete their obligations for warranty work. And that's what they have said so far. We have not been able to get into their books to see if that, in fact, is true. But that's the information that they've provided, is that they have enough resources to cover those obligations. So you need to keep the paperwork so you know how to get a hold of them. And but the word we have so far is that they are going to honor that warranty.
And yet when you'd call the store, nobody knows anything, and now they're completely shut down. So.
Yeah. For the most part, the extended warranties are handled by a third party. And so that you should be able to contact the warranty provider. They will probably direct you to another local computer place if you need service work. But I believe, you know, what we know so far is we think they're going to handle it.
Oh, good. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Interesting call.
The number of identity theft victims in this country hit 9.9 million last year, an increase of 22% from the previous year. Tax time is a perfect opportunity for thieves to try to access a computer because of tax-related documents, personal information used in the creation of tax returns, maybe PDFs. What can you do to reduce the odds of an attack upon your computer at this tax time of year?
Tax time is a good time to talk about this, but I think most of us have lots of personal information on our computers year-round, so... The advice is take steps to safeguard your computer from hackers. Anti-spyware, anti-malware, there are products available out there that will watch against hacking attacks. We'll make sure you get one. Most of them are subscription services, so that they keep updating as new hacks and new scams come along. They update on a regular basis to try and keep your computer from being attacked. It is a constant battle. And I mean, it's like you need to hire a guard, only it's an electronic guard. We don't recommend any products specifically, but I would talk to your computer folks, whoever you have work on your computers, ask them. My computer, the last time I had it in, the technician asked me if I wanted a certain product installed, told me that it's the one he uses all the time, and I was really happy to have someone with more expertise than me give me a good recommendation.
Jim, thank you so much for being here today. Time has flown, and we look forward to another visit.
Well, thank you for having me.
Hope your cold gets better soon. Maybe the spring-like weather will take care of things.
We hope so.
Yes. Jim Rabbit is the director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection in the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And the 800 number for you, in case you have a complaint you'd like to check on, is 800-422-7128. And the hotline on online, DATCP hotline at wisconsin.gov. To sign up for Wisconsin's no-call list, all you have to do is go to 866-966-2255. I'm sorry we couldn't get to all of the calls and all of the emails, and we thank you very much for listening here to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.